enshrined in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Welcome, everyone, to Spouting Off. My, I have so much on my mind. If you'd like to join us and you're listening live, which would be Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern, live, you can hear us at WSMN.live at those times from anywhere, and then those shows go out to a variety of places. If you'd like to call in and you're listening live, you know, all that electronic differences, right? 603-816-1590. Right before airtime, I was listening to a fascinating monologue by Tucker Carlson. I think it was done yesterday. Believe it or not, I don't have Fox News. I don't have Fox News because the only person really that I have any interest in watching is indeed Tucker Carlson. I have a friend who I respect immeasurably, at least his intellect, not his moral compass, who says Tucker is the biggest liar and he wants to punch him in the face. This is also the guy that wants to punch Trump in the face. He used to be pretty rational, but he watches way too much propaganda media, and that's what the propaganda media continues to do, is incite anger, divisiveness, hostility towards groups and people because, well, the media told you to. So, Tucker Carlson, I just posted this article on Twitter, and I encourage you to take a look at it if you go to my website, or rather, Twitter. I can't post it on my website. I have to post it on Twitter, which is simply at KarenCataline.com. I'm going there now. God, so much technology. I am stunned at the amount of technology that I have to do just to do a show. However, Tucker Carlson, and it is up now. I posted it just a few minutes ago. Tucker on why transgenderists hate Christians. Why is that, by the way? He says it's because they refuse to bow down and worship a false idol. How about that? As a Jewish person, I can certainly relate. Jews have theological differences with Christians on bowing down to any kind of false idol. And that's okay to have theological religious differences as long as you don't put a gun to people's head and say, you will believe this. And as a Jew, I stand with Christians on religious freedom and many, many other issues. It's perfectly okay to have disagreements when you can disagree civilly, and that's what our country was founded upon, religious pluralism. Tucker Carlson said a most profound thing, and I must say, I've been saying this for a long time, so it's good to hear him say it. Smart man, gutsy man. Sometimes people wonder why he's still on the air in an age of true vicious censorship. Vicious is the right word, where people who dare to express an opposing opinion are branded and marginalized a la Saul Alinsky and destroyed as much as they can. This flies in the face of everything that we know and love about America. Here's what Tucker Carlson said. He said, the country is no longer divided between right and left, and I'm paraphrasing now. I didn't have time to send any audio to our esteemed producer. It's no longer Republican versus conservative or any of the divisions that the media continues to exploit. The differences are between people who think they are God and those who know they are not. That doesn't mean people who know they are not are perfect. They're not. It doesn't mean that anything else, but that they know that they are not God, and therefore they would like to hold themselves accountable. Tucker Carlson goes on to say that people who think they are God, and they are narcissists, they're God in their own universe, and they want to be God in yours, have no concern for others, no matter how much they preen and virtue signal. I'm adding a little, that's not all. He didn't say all that, I am. They externalize everything and admit to nothing. There is no accountability. Now, I want to tread a little lightly, only be out of respect for the horror that happened earlier this week, for the horror that happened that a person would shoot 3 9-year-old children and 3 adults in the name of something that they feel persecuted about. Tucker Carlson goes into quite a lot of detail about why it is that we are not allowed to see that so-called manifesto, and the trans community, the activists, and there's a lot of different ones, so I don't know. I haven't done research, but there are truly violent trans groups, apparently, that are emerging that are advocating murder towards people who dare to disagree. And how do they even justify that in their minds? Or let's just talk about the mindset, because broad generalizations are tough to make and muck things up even further. The mindset that says that you're entitled to kill innocent people of any age because of an ideology that they hold with which you disagree, part of how they justify that, number one, it's psychotic and murderous, vicious, running out of adjectives, but it is the sense of persecution and paranoia. If you are on a steady diet of being told you're a victim, you're a victim, you're a victim, you're being persecuted, the reason you can't live your life is because of these people who disapprove of you, the reason you can't do or live as you wish in a formerly free country is because there are Christians who disagree with you. And that's just the start. Then if you superimpose lies and deception on top of that persecution, and you lead people to believe things that simply are not true, then you have a real recipe for horror and disaster. What are they leading people to believe? Well, there are people who believe that because Tennessee, and I believe it is Georgia, I don't have those in front of me. In fact, I was cheering the legislation that said that for minors, gender-maiming surgeries with or without parents' consent on children who cannot give their consent is to be outlawed. It's a shame we need laws like that, but indeed we do. We have a media and we have Democrats and other radicals who want the so-called trans community to believe that that is a persecutorial position to take. Are you kidding me? No, you're not. To stand up for the rights of children who cannot give their consent to do a life-altering surgery, and to be told that you must believe that toddlers can be trans, toddlers can be the wrong gender. This is psychosis that is being done to children. It's psychological and physical maiming and abuse. child abuse. And there are states that are moving to outlaw that until such time as a person reaches the age of consent. Those same activists used to believe that you had to be, 18 to have a gun, 18 to serve in the military. We have age restrictions on all kinds of things, including pornography. But I'm trying to be logical in an illogical environment. And so they are led to believe that the mere disagreement with an already insane policy is tantamount to being persecuted, tantamount to being unable to live your own life. These, my friends, are political tactics, because even the so-called transgenders, even this person who committed this atrocity earlier in the week, was being used as a useful idiot. That doesn't mean she isn't accountable. She's 100% accountable. But to employ an appalling and extreme assault on the culture and on cultural norms, and then watch people gear up to protest and then brand them the dangerous ones, them the terrorists, them the threat, thereby manipulating the public into allowing and justifying more suppression of the targeted group that you were out to get in the first place. I've seen this as it has happened in the Middle East. Again and again, there have been terrorist acts against people in Israel. And when Israel stood up and fought back, the media apparatus said Israel was the perpetrator. Israel perpetrated this crime. Now, yes, it's a generalization, but this is a tactic that has been used again and again to gain favor, to gain public sympathy for a particular group that you want the public to give a pass to. So our culture is under attack, ladies and gentlemen, and I've tried to point out at least some of the tactics being used. We still like to talk about good news around here, and we're going to try and do that today and tomorrow. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off here on WSMN.live. Don't go away.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
The Reading Foundation provides evaluation and tutorial programs based upon the Orton-Gillingham philosophy of learning, based upon the study of language, how children acquire language, and the mechanisms involved in learning. All the learning pathways of the brain, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and tactile, are addressed and strengthened to build a strong foundation for the acquisition of reading skills. If you are interested in learning more, please contact the Reading Foundation for more information. The Reading Foundation is at 10 Northern Boulevard, Unit 19, Amherst, New Hampshire, 03031. Or you can email us at readingfoundation_rf@yahoo.com. And of course, you can call anytime at 603-882-0992. The Reading Foundation, Amherst, New Hampshire.
Karen Cataline puts the Judeo in Judeo-Christian. Now back to Spouting Off.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. It's an honor and a pleasure to sit here to do this program. And our very first guest this hour is someone who every time I have him on, I am impressed and say, wow, he is so good. And we have the pleasure of hearing him and learning from him right now. His name is Selwyn Duke. You can reach him at that @ Selwyn Duke, I presume, is on Twitter. He has written for The New American for more than a decade, also written for The Hill, The Observer, American Conservative, WorldNet Daily, and The American Thinker. Many other print and online publications, also contributed to college textbooks and appeared on television and a frequent guest on radio like we have him right now. Selwyn Duke, thank you for joining us once again.
Karen, it's good to be with you, but I don't know if I can do this because when I was little, my parents told me to stop spouting off. That's what they said. How are you?
Yes, well, if the left can change the meaning of certain cliches and words, then I guess so can I. It means saying what's on your mind uncensored. How about that? And thank you.
Good.
And you do a lot of that. You say what's on your mind and you have important things to say. Topic for today is socialism rising. Bernie Sanders leading the charge? The radical left has put down Bernie Sanders and seems to have out-communisted Bernie Sanders. Tell us more, would you?
Yeah, Bernie Sanders, the Jackie Mason of the left, he's still out there. But anyway, he just wrote this book titled It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. And it's very interesting because he and other, quote, democratic socialists are trying to rebrand socialism in just that way, calling it democratic socialists. One of them even said, this Peter Dreyer, he's a professor from Occidental University, he said that, well, you have to understand, we democratic socialists, we believe that businesses should stay in private hands. And I heard that and I said, whoa, well, that's something new. And I'm not sure I really believe this, but here's the problem, Karen. Socialism is gaining tremendous currency in our society. In fact, there have been a lot of polls to that effect. One of them in 2019 is a report from the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. And here's what it found. It found that more than 70% of millennials said they were likely to vote for a socialist for president.
How many?
Now, think
what
about
percent?
That. More than 70% of millennials said that.
Wow. Wow.
That's shocking. That's distressing. And here's the thing, though. A lot of these people, many of them are young, some not so much anymore, they don't know what socialism means. In fact, most don't. It just sounds good to them. What is in a word? A lot. Because after all, people like socializing, they like those who are sociable, they may belong to social clubs. So socialism just sounds so nice and cushy and innocuous. And that's the power of branding. And by the way, relating to this, Karen, I want to mention something. The title of Sanders' book, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism, This is why I don't use the word capitalism. Now, think about this. The word, as it pertains to a political or economic system, was originated by socialists, and it was used pejoratively for the purposes of demonizing economic freedom. That's why I use the term economic freedom. Remember, capitalism, you've got capital in there. A synonym for that is money, so capitalism could be conceptualized as moneyism. Doesn't sound too good, right? It's meant to not sound very good. If we want to win the debates, we have to control the language of the debates. Now, I've been talking a lot, so I'll shut up.
Well, no, I love when you talk. As you began, I was thinking how much this generation that said they'd vote for a socialist, 70% of them have been indoctrinated in government schools that didn't teach them a thing about liberty or freedom or America, taught them not only hatred of America, but extolled the virtues of socialism. So now are we not seeing the seeds that have, started to take root or not?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. That indoctrination that's been going on for decades. Look, Soviet defector Yuri Bezmenov said in the mid-80s already that this process of demoralization, the undermining of the American people, was already more than complete back then, decades ago. And also, it's a lack of virtue in the people. It's highly reflective of that. But what we
which
have
is
to point
also
out
cultural
people,
indoctrination, I might add. Look at what the media and Hollywood did to our culture to elevate immorality, to elevate the bad guy is the hero and the good guy is a dupe, is an idiot. Is evil even?
Oh.
I'm sorry, throwing that in there.
No, you're right. I'm glad you did. I wrote an essay about that for The New American some years ago entitled, Where Have You Gone, George Washington? And I talked about that, how we have actually made bad guys look like heroes, but I don't want to digress.
Correct.
But here's the thing. What I wanted to point out is we should emphasize that socialism has the longest history of failure that you could ever imagine. It didn't just start in 1848 with the publication of the Communist Manifesto, which, by the way, originally was going to be titled the Socialist Manifesto. It goes back actually further. In 1825, there was a Scottish reformer named Robert Owen, who perhaps inspired by all the Christian communes we had in America in the 19th century, some of which were very successful, tried to institute his own secular collectivist commune in a place that he called New Harmony, Indiana. Well, it didn't work out very well. It dissolved after 4 years in 1929. Why? What was the difference between that and the religious communes? Well, neither had the profit motive, Karen, but there was one big difference. The religious communes, whatever you think of their theology, had the God motive. Because if you think that you've been enjoined by the divine to be industrious, or maybe even that you're earning your way into heaven, that's a very powerful motive. But Robert Owen's commune had neither the profit motive nor the God motive, and we have seen this replicated throughout the history of socialism. It's always the same phenomenon. When you take incentive out of the system fails. And if it couldn't even work on a small scale in New Harmony, where they only had 800 residents, do you think it's ever going to work on a national scale? There's no way. It's never going to happen.
So when you touched on something that is a bit of a pet peeve for me that I want to get your thoughts about, just like you said, you don't like to use the word capitalism. It's always bothered me when conservatives say socialism has never worked, has failed 100% of the time. I don't like that characterization because socialism, even if it did work, it's not the issue. Socialism is morally bankrupt. Socialism is evil for the simple reason that it requires tyranny in order to work at all. And I don't think that these young people have a remote clue. You could get into debate and a debate about what works. Socialism works great when you use force. And that's the only way it can work, is with force, with tyranny. Isn't that yeah. the? I wonder if that's not the better argument, and that's where my passion lies, is in talking about socialism being requiring force and therefore evil because it offends the moral imperative of personal freedom. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I partially agree with you. I part company where you say that socialism can work if there's force, because it really never has worked. Sometimes leftists will like to point at China and they'll claim that that's a model of successful socialism, but it's not true because, as we know, China departed from its Marxist philosophy decades ago, and actually now it's more correctly described as a fascist ethnostate. And that's why it's more successful, because it's introduced elements of economic freedom into its system. But I agree with you 100%. And listen,
what does work mean? You know, I'm sorry, but we got to find out work. What does that actually mean? Mean people are happy or people are prosperous? Yeah. Or what does work mean? I don't know. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but go ahead. Please answer that.
Yeah, that's okay. How can we perfectly epitomize this? Well, I think this is a good way to do it. Winston Churchill said about democracy that it's the worst system in the world, except for all the rest. Now, what actually is a healthy free market? Well, it's democracy as applied to economics, because what you have is the market, which comprises all the people, determining what goods and services will prevail through their daily votes, quote unquote. And by that, I mean their buying decisions, okay?
Right.
And just as with political democracy, you could say the same thing. This economic democracy, this economic freedom, is the worst system in the world, except for all the rest. And this puts it in perspective, because you have only two choices. You have this economic democracy, or you have economic autocracy. That's it. And in the latter case, what you have is a small oligarchy of people at the top trying to micromanage the economy and determine winners and losers. Yes. And it is immoral, as you said, and it doesn't work. So there's no reason to go in that direction. Emphasize that. Do you want economic democracy or economic autocracy?
Selwyn, for people who have passion like you and I, and I don't know how old you are, maybe it's being older and having had the blessings of relative liberty in most of our lives, is there hope to turn this around, watching and seeing the brazenness with which our liberties are being robbed from us?
Yeah. Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to understand it all does come down to virtue in the people, to morality, like we touched on before. And that's why it's so sad when you see how our whole society is designed to undermine the morality of the young. Willy Munzenberg, the communist activist of the early and mid-1900s, reportedly said, "We're going to make the West so rotten that it stinks." And that's a fait accompli. It really is. And it's so significant because, to quote Edmund Burke, the Irish Anglo philosopher, he said, "It is ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Their passions forge their fetters." And our founding fathers expressed that truth. Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it?
Yes.
Our founding fathers expressed that truth in different words repeatedly. It is a must. We want to make America great again. You can't do that unless you mama. What does that mean? That means make America moral again.
Moral.
I wrote an article about that. Right. Very, very important. Yeah.
You know, you are among my several of my favorite guests. What do you want to leave us with? We've got about 3.5 minutes. I want to let you just talk. What do you want to leave us with? What's the most important thing you can leave us with that you can say?
Yeah, I can expand on what I just said. You know, the ancient Greek philosopher Plato, he talked about this. He said it was important to raise children in an atmosphere of nobility and grace, because when you do that, you develop in them an emotional attachment to virtue. When they're still too young to understand it on a rational level, but then when they reach the age of reason, they'll be more receptive to the dictates of reason because their emotions will have been correctly formed. On the other hand, you can do the opposite much more easily. You can inculcate children with an emotional attachment to vice, And when that happens and they reach the age of reason, they become unreasonable. And then they gravitate towards dysfunctional, misbegotten ideologies that correspond to their corrupted emotional foundation. And, Karen, this explains something all conservatives have experienced. We know sometimes you'll talk to a leftist, right? You debate him, and he won't listen to reason. He can't follow one point logically to the next. It's all emotion. Why is that? It's for the reason that I just articulated, because these leftists are those people, to paraphrase Jonathan Swift, who you cannot reason out of a position because they have not reasoned themselves into it. These are people with corrupted emotional foundations, and we're creating more of them all the time with our corruptive media, entertainment in particular, because kids imbibe a lot of entertainment, and of course, academia, and now big tech as well.
Yeah. Well, and it's impossible almost, I could think, not to see it as having been quite deliberate when you see the results. You know, that old phrase, you're more educated in many respects in classical education than I, but cui bono? Who benefits to corrupt the culture, to demoralize the culture? Well, the communists benefit, don't they?
They certainly do. And the thing to remember, though, is that once their government comes to fruition, once they have absolute power, and Yuri Bezmenov, who I mentioned earlier, pointed this out, all these people who facilitated the left-wing revolution will be crushed like grapes, because these people are destabilizers. And these civilization destroyers who want power only want such people around when they don't have the power, because then destabilization serves their ends. But once they have the power, they don't want destabilization anymore. And so they eliminate all of these rabble-rousers and
useful
the rabble themselves.
They are useful idiots.
Yeah, useful idiots, exactly.
Tell everybody where they can find you and read you. It's essential.
Okay. Well, my website is selwynduke.com, and I'm also published just about every day at thenewamerican.com, which is a very, very good website run by people who have tremendous integrity, and that's hard to find in the media today, except
sure
on the
is.
Karen Cataline Show, because that's another place where integrity reigns.
Okay. Selwyn Duke, that's spelled S-E-L-W-Y-N Duke, the normal way. Thank you so much for joining us. We're honored to have you.
Thank you, Karen, and God bless.
And God bless you, too. We'll have our guest from the Epoch Times right after this. Don't go away. It's Spouting Off.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. They're not out to tell you the truth of what's happening. They're out to tell you the picture of the world that they represent. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in facts, and prevent people from being misled. The Epoch Times is independent. We're not controlled by any special interest, and we never will be. This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would ensnare this country in ignorance, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth. Subscribe today to our digital edition at theepochtimes.com and join the Americans who are seeking truth and tradition. Read the difference on all your devices. We'd love to have you on board.
Are you tired of the same old snacks? Looking for something a little healthier than that bag of chips or candy bar? Even your average bag of trail mix these days is little more than peanuts, raisins, and candy-coated chocolate. Not very healthy, is it? Allow me to introduce you to White Mountain Munchies. Made from 100% all-natural ingredients, White Mountain Munchies combines unique flavors with nutritional value that will tingle your taste buds and strengthen and sustain your overall health and wellness. Eating good never tasted so good. From Maggie's Maple Madness to Hannah's Heavenly Harvest, Grayson's Getaway Goodies, In our limited edition Christmas blend, Jacoby's Jolly Jumble, White Mountain Munchies offers nutritious and delicious snacks that the whole family is sure to love. Pick yours up now through our easy-to-use online store at whitemountainmunchies.com. White Mountain Munchies, non-GMO when you're on the go.
The Village Network was created for only one reason, to keep those 62 and older in their home as long as possible, ideally for the rest of their life. The Village Network is the answer for children who do not live nearby and worry about their parents being able to remain independently and safely at home. The Village Network has a network of trusted providers and volunteers who provide transportation, home repair, home-delivered meals, grocery shopping, and others who are there to help when you need them. We can even find someone to walk your dog. The Village Network does not charge thousands of dollars of upfront costs for services you may never need. With the Village Network, you only pay for services when you need them. Become a member of the Village Network today by calling 603-891-0008. That's 603-891-0008. The Village Network. Become a member today.
Outdoor Almanac. Brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal.
The Red Sox are in spring training, so that means it's almost salmon season. Time to find some open water and start trolling. But how do you start? They rarely do anything that approaches a school, and you can't always say they're by the rocks or in the deep water or by the rivers. They can be anywhere. But at least early in the season, you're pretty much assured they'll be on top. So the easiest way to find them is troll a streamer or some hardware. In his book, Hunting, Fishing, and Camping, Mr. L.L. Bean said that the flies I have found most effective in the following order are Supervisor, Red and White Bucktail, Gray Ghost, Golden Witch, Edson Tiger Light, Edson Tiger Dark, White Bucktail, and Brown Bucktail. Doesn't matter whether you head out to Winnipesaukee, Newfound, Squam, or any of the other big lakes, just getting out signals the start of another great fishing season in New Hampshire.
Outdoor Almanac is brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal, the magazine for people with outside interests.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Hi, it's Karen Cataline. It's been almost a decade since I wrote Fat Lash Food Police in the Fear of Thin. It's about my early experiences in child beauty pageants and being put on extreme diets. Remember when that was shocking? Sadly, that seems like child's play compared to what we are watching today when politicians and woke corporations are actually advocating for the sexualization of children. Everyone's children. We're watching a frontal attack on childhood innocence. This is one story, my story. Fat Lash illustrates and explains why good boundaries are essential for kids to grow up healthy. They need their parents to set them, not the government. Get Fat Lash today. It's available in paperback or ebook at Amazon or at my website, KarenCataline.com.
Sign up for Karen's newsletter and read her columns at KarenCataline.com. Now back to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. So good to have you along with us. We have a special feature, a weekly feature, in which we get to talk to a reporter from the Epoch Times. And as you may know, Epoch Times is one of our sponsors. We love promoting them because you hear some of those ads all the time. And we're now starting to have some of the same reporters helping us out and telling us what they've been reporting on. And our next guest is no exception. His name is Matthew Vadim, I believe. I can never remember if it's Vadim or Vadim. I think it's Vadim. And Matthew is an award-winning investigative journalist and a recognized expert in left-wing activism. He also reports a great, great deal on the Supreme Court. Matthew, thank you once again for joining us. We so appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be here.
And it's Vadim, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You got it
right. I knew that. I got to write that down, put a little strong, you know, thing on top of the A. Anyway,
well,
you've
done.
Got all kinds of articles here in the Epoch Times, and I want to ask you about a couple of them. very, very important as it relates to the Supreme Court. Not too long ago, you wrote, this is a much older article I'm looking at, deportations plunge under Biden in U.S. interior data. This isn't as new as I thought, but please, by all means, tell us about that. And if there's one you'd rather talk about, we'll get to that as well.
About deportations plunging?
Yes, the fact that deportations have plunged under the Biden administration. They're not deporting anybody. They're bringing people in, aren't they?
Well, bringing people in or allowing them to come in and then not doing anything about them. There's been this border surge for ever since President Biden came into office, where they don't, you know, basically there is no southern border, and people just cross it whenever they, more or less whenever they feel like it, and then they get processed by immigration if immigration is available to do it. If there aren't facilities available to hold them at the border, then the Biden administration ships them to various locations across the United States and floods the country with these illegal aliens while they're being processed. At least they're theoretically being processed. It takes a long time. In the meantime, these people are, you know, the U.S. population is increasing, but not by design, just by happenstance, because there are all these illegals here, and there's no the government doesn't provide any incentive for people not to cross the border illegally, and that's
right.
One of the reasons we have problems here today. And you know,
yes,
it started largely under Obama.
Matthew,
and then,
I apologize. Mm-hmm. I now realize when I was looking at the wrong page and there were articles that were out of order that I was looking at, and I apologize. This, I'm still glad that you talked about deportations, but the article that is phenomenally relevant right now and that people are reading is one that you just came out with the headline, Christian counselor asks Supreme Court to invalidate a law forbidding talk against gender transitions. Talk about this case, because it couldn't be more relevant in light of the atrocity committed earlier this week.
Right. This is a case brought by the Alliance Defending Freedom regarding Washington State, and there's a counselor there, a licensed marriage and family counselor named Brian Tingley, who's a practicing Christian. And he's upset because Washington State limits what he can tell his patients, what he can tell his clients. He is not allowed to, under current Washington State law, he's not allowed to recommend against sex changes, against gender transitions, as they're called nowadays, gender affirming care. And he can't try and dissuade somebody from embarking upon that, life-changing course of action.
Mm-hmm.
And he can actually be fined and have his license taken away if he does that. So he's not happy about it, and he's suing, and he lost, and he's appealing to the Supreme Court.
This is head-scratching because, number one, you don't see anybody pushing that you cannot talk about gender. You can't talk about gender transition surgery. The reverse isn't true. I wonder about the First Amendment altogether. And does this go for minors? Or is it for adults only? What is the current
I think
law?
I think it's for anybody. And it's a violation of the First Amendment, he argues, multiple ways. The First Amendment encompasses a number of rights, the right to free speech and you know, the right to practice your religion, to, you know, express your religious beliefs, which are two considered to be two separate rights. And so, you know, he's arguing, he just filed this with the Supreme Court this week, and Washington, he's suing the Attorney General of Washington State, a left-wing Democrat by the name of Bob Ferguson, who gets about a month to respond to the petition that he filed.
Hmm. So when might we hear an answer on this case? Is it going to take like 6 years, like it often does, to get,
no.
Or we have to still find out if the Supreme Court will even hear the case? Am I right?
We have to find out if the Supreme Court will hear the case, you know, and that will take a few months. And then, but I think there's a pretty, this is exactly the kind of thing that the Supreme Court is interested in, especially with its newfound interest under the three conservative supermajority on the court, its newfound interest in protecting religious rights. So I
one
think
would
it's right
hope,
up
anyway.
Alley. And I think that there's a very good chance. You know, you can't predict what the Supreme Court's going to do.
Sure.
Courts are always looking for excuses not to take cases, to say that they're premature or that, you know, that there's something else that could be done.
right.
So they look for excuses not to take cases. That's just the way the judicial system works. But this really seems like a case that they might be interested in. So,
well, we certainly hope so.
It has a good shot that they'll take it.
Yeah, I also wonder very quickly if the issue of professional autonomy wouldn't come in here. I know that these cases are often argued on very narrow grounds, but professional autonomy goes to a host of professionals, including medical professionals, who are told, you will not prescribe this, you will not refuse to prescribe that. You know, where does a medical professional get to practice their profession without the heavy breath of the government and alphabet agencies telling them what they will and will not do?
Well, that issue of professional conduct comes under the ambit of the First Amendment as well, and the Supreme Court has ruled, as I noted in the article, that counseling speech is you know, the counseling speech is protected, and the Supreme Court ruled, as I noted in the article, in 2018 in National Institute of Family and Life Advocates versus Becerra, that a California law that forced pro-life pregnancy counseling centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry was unconstitutional and struck it down.
Hmm.
So the government can't force Americans to communicate messages with which they disagree, and that applies in the realm of professional conduct too. So you also have to wonder about California has other laws too right now that affect professional conduct, and that you know, you have to wonder if those are going to be called into question as well. But for now, we're dealing with this case, which is in Washington State, also on the left coast. And like you say, I think there's a pretty good chance that the Supreme Court will take up the case.
Well, we hope so. With our last few minutes, Matthew Vadum from the Epoch Times, what are some of the most relevant cases we might look for in the coming weeks and months before the end of the Supreme Court session?
Well, there's the case of Supreme Court just agreed a couple of days ago to take a case of about a lawsuit happy disability rights activist who sued more than 600 hotels over their alleged failure to explain to potential customers how they how they accommodate people with disabilities, and sued so many hundreds of hotels because they didn't put the information she thought they should on their website. And
sounds like compelled speech, Matthew, doesn't it?
Right. Again, yeah. The Americans with Disabilities Act says that you have to make certain accommodations, so these people, they call them civil rights testers, will do things to in order to force compliance by the targeted industry. And here the hotel industry said it's being harassed, and the Supreme Court agreed to take the case a couple of days ago.
Hmm.
Wow. So that's kind of interesting. That's March 27th. It was granted, called Atchison Hotels versus Laufer. So that's kind of interesting. What else have they done? Somebody's asked. There's some cases about trademark infringement that probably wouldn't interest most people. So I'll skip over those. There was a very
How about the IRS? There, we're coming up to tax season, and there was a Supreme Court case on that you just posted an article about, I think, yesterday.
Right. And yes, the Supreme Court yesterday heard a case about brought by a woman named Hannah Polselli, and her husband owed $2 million to the IRS and was delinquent. And so the Supreme Court, so the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, started secretly seizing bank records of organizations around the husband, such as the wife and of the law firms. That
unfortunately, we have about 30 seconds. I need you to wrap
right.
it up because I want
and
people
so this,
to know
this was too,
how they
this,
can reach you.
This was
yeah.
an abuse that you can't just go around seizing bank records for the person who's not the tax delinquent.
Yes.
So this is an issue, and the Supreme Court heard it, and they seemed sympathetic to the wife bringing the claim.
Great. Matthew Vadum, we love having you on the program. You put out a lot of important stuff on the Epic Times. Look for him, and thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, that does it for this edition of Spouting Off. Tune in every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday when there's always a lot to spout off about here on Spouting Off.